From Quality Radio Productions, it's an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. It's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with an episode of Let George Do It, starring Bob Bailey as detective for hire George Valentine. The series ran from 1946 through 1954. In 1954, Bob Bailey was replaced by Olin Soleil. This broadcast also stars Virginia Gregg as Valentine's secretary, Claire Brooks. And a producer's note, there are several spots in this program where the audio breaks up for a brief second. Unfortunately, all of the transfers I have of this series from around this time are plagued with this problem for some unknown reason. A minor annoyance, but certainly not to the point where one can't follow the story or enjoy it. So, opening up this Upstate Radio Theater, it's Let George Do It, and program 310 in the series, Seed of Destruction.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you've got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Standard Oil Company of California invites you to Let George Do It. In a moment, we'll begin tonight's adventure of George Valentine. In hard city driving, taxicabs work round the clock. Stop and go, stop and go. And yet, in one fleet of cabs, heavy-duty RPM motor oil actually reduced wear 71%. In this tough day-in, day-out grind of traffic, heavy-duty RPM gave top protection, the kind of protection your car needs for top performance. It cut engine wear, kept oil consumption way down, and increased the time between overhauls. So, get what's best for your car. Buy heavy-duty RPM motor oil at any independent Chevron gas station or standard station, where they say, and mean, we take better care of your car. Tonight's story, Seed of Destruction, a transcribed adventure of George Valentine.
Dear Mr. Valentine, the name Dan Creighton must be familiar to you. Anyone who's read a newspaper or turned on the radio in the last 3 weeks must react to it. Out of morbid curiosity, if nothing else. Well, I'm Mrs. Dan Creighton. And the mystery of my husband's disappearance is something that I just can't stand any longer. I can't sleep nights. I hate the sound of the doorbell for fear that it's the police or the reporters again. And yet I rush to answer it because it might be some news of him. Good news or bad. I almost think at this point that even bad news would be better than none. Mr. Valentine, I'm through waiting. I want you to help me. I'll pay you well. And believe me, the case is challenge enough for anyone. So please, come right away. Anxiously yours, Edna C. Creighton.
Of course, I know some of the details, Mrs. Creighton, from the newspapers.
But I want you to forget them, all of them.
What?
All of them. I want you to start with only one fact, Mr. Valentine.
Namely?
My husband vanished into thin air, without reason, without leaving a single clue.
Do you really believe that's possible, Mrs. Creighton?
Well, when you and Mr. Valentine start checking for yourselves, Miss Brooks, I think you will be convinced it can be.
Well, then there isn't much point in our even tackling it, is there?
Oh, but there is.
Hmm?
Well, for one thing, I know you and your reputation, Mr. Valentine. You couldn't resist a puzzler like this if you tried.
Touché, Mrs. Creighton.
Point number two, there's always the seed of destruction.
I beg your pardon?
It's part of a German proverb that my grandmother used to quote to me when I was a child.
Proverb?
The seed of destruction is within all of us, and give it room to grow and nothing can stop it.
That's a cheerful thought.
As a matter of fact, it is, because it will destroy that criminal.
And you're sure there's a criminal involved, eh, Mrs. Creighton?
Dan didn't leave me of his own accord. He didn't. Something happened to him.
I see. And all I start with is the picture of Mr. Creighton. Is that it?
Oh, it's the one that I always liked best.
And he's a very good-looking man.
Is that so strange? Why shouldn't he be?
Well, I just...
I was a very handsome young lady when we were married, believe it or not. I'm sorry, but I've just been under terrible pressure.
I understand.
You will try and find Mr. Creighton, won't you, Mr. Valentine?
Yes, Mrs. Creighton. And I'll respect your wish. I'll check every step of this case for myself, taking nothing for granted. Not even anything you said to me. Right?
Quite right, Mr. Valentine.
No, Valentine, no. Nobody's timing can be that perfect. It can't be.
Okay, Johnson, okay. It's too early in the year to make a bid for an Oscar.
Yes, Lieutenant, just what's bothering you?
For 3 weeks, I'm safe on the sidelines, out of reach of fire and brickbats. Then today, the commissioner hands me and homicide the Creighton case. Because missing persons can't do anything, and the papers are riding them, and because...
And I get hired by Mrs. Creighton. Why, that should be cause for celebration, Johnson. You know, shoulder to shoulder, two heads are better than one, all that sort of thing.
That's better. See, George, the good lieutenant is normal again.
All right, seriously, Johnson, what are the facts? Simple, hard facts.
Darn few. Creighton and his wife's brother, Stan Collins, own a bunch of small movie houses in this section of the country. Creighton was visiting one of their theaters in Ridgely Plains when he got a call from a party, or parties unknown, walked out to meet him, or rather her, with a big happy grin on his face, and was never seen again.
The phone call was definitely from a woman, huh? The papers didn't have that.
Papers don't know everything.
No leads so far.
Oh, 100 of those, but not a good solid one on the bunch.
And so homicide gets called in.
And it's going to be a big headache. If Dan Creighton's been dead for 3 weeks, where's the body? The boys and missing persons are smart. They looked high and low.
And found nothing.
Yeah. And Valentine, you know that getting rid of a body is about the hardest job there is in the whole world.
Not to be obvious, a murderer could have buried poor Mr. Creighton.
Ridgely Plains is a highly choice suburb. Every inch of ground is carefully cultivated. No one has been seen doing any extracurricular digging.
Oh.
Well, Johnson, good luck to you on your future search in Ridgely Plains. We'll probably see you there sometime.
Sometime. Do you have anything more important to do?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have. I promised Mr. Creighton to take no shortcuts, but check every step of the case myself. Come along, Brooksy.
Dead. You gave me a scare, Mr. Valentine.
I simply said that's one assumption the police must make, Mr. Collins.
Yes, I suppose so. It'd be a terrible shock to Edna. She built her whole life around Dan. You've noticed that, haven't you, Miss Brooks?
Yes, I have.
Mr. Collins, I understand that you and Mr. Creighton have been having some differences of opinion lately. At least about the way the future of this business should be run.
I gather that you've snooped around here enough to get that information.
Well, in my business, this kind of snooping is sort of glorified by the name detective work.
Yes, I guess so. I'm sorry.
Besides, your sister did want Mr. Valentine to take nothing for granted in this case. Check everything for himself.
Well, actually, I suppose I'm the more daring partner in this team. You see, there are things I want to do that Dan was holding back on. Things that would take a great deal of the firm's money.
Yes? Go on, please.
Well, on this last trip around, Dan has been taking as much money away from the different theaters as was feasible. Usually, it had been forwarded here to the office, but I presume Dan was sort of making sure I wouldn't get my hands on it to do anything impulsive.
I see. Then by the time Mr. Creighton had gotten around to Ridgely Plains, he had quite a lot of money with him.
Yes, that's right.
Well, was this gathering up of the money purely one-sided, Mr. Collins? After all, since you were partners...
I'm afraid I didn't realize what Dan was doing until very late. I did beat him to the punch at the last place, however.
Ridgely Plains?
Yes, Miss Brooks. I was there the day before Dan came and disappeared. Oh, the police know all about that. I've been thoroughly checked and given a clean bill of health.
Still, to be brutally frank, Mr. Collins, you would benefit, in a business sense, if anything happened to Mr. Creighton.
To be brutally honest, Mr. Valentine, I'd benefit greatly. But I wouldn't look for the seed of destruction in me.
Oh, so you know about that, huh?
Well, after all, Edna and I heard the same proverb from the same grandmother.
Uh-huh.
Tell me, Mr. Collins, how did Mr. Creighton get around to those different movie houses?
Oh, his secretary, Paul Doerr, always drove him. Nice young man.
Oh.
Well, I wonder if Mr. Doerr would have time to drive us to Ridgely Plains, Mr. Collins.
Why, yes, yes, I'm sure he would. You see, Mr. Valentine, the truth of the matter is, I'm anxious for you to find my brother-in-law. Ralph Holder, the manager of our theater there, he too will do everything he can to help you.
Mr. Creighton was standing just about here in the lobby when the phone call came. Isn't that right, Mr. Holder?
That's right, Mr. Doerr. Mm-hmm.
It was just before noon. The theater wasn't open yet, huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it was about the same time as right now.
And as I get it, an usher answered the phone and then told Mr. Creighton it was for him.
That's exactly what happened, Mr. Valentine. The usher Joe is around somewhere. I'll get him for you.
Thanks, Mr. Holder.
Mr. Doerr.
Yes, ma'am.
Strictly off the record, do you have any idea who the lady on the phone might have been? As I understand it, you and Mr. Creighton have made periodic trips here to Ridgely Plains.
Oh, I wouldn't know anything about Mr. Creighton's personal life or his friends.
I bet. Would you venture a general opinion?
Oh, of course, sir.
Would you call Mr. Creighton, to coin a phrase, a gay dog?
I wouldn't say so.
Uh-huh.
This is Joe Ritchie, Miss Brooks, and Mr. Valentine.
How do you do?
And Mr. Valentine would like to ask a few questions, Joe.
Yeah, sure thing. The lady who asked for Mr. Creighton when you answered the phone.
Hey, sounded nice.
You have no idea who she was?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Voice sounded familiar, sort of. I can't say I recognized her.
Well, that's too bad.
Of course, she didn't say very much, just asked to talk to Mr. Creighton. Hey, but from her voice, I bet that dame would be a lot of fun.
Yes, sirree.
Joe.
Sorry, miss. Well, knowing Mr. Creighton, I mean...
Well, go on, Joe. What were you going to say?
Nothing except that he always got around, if you know what I mean.
You're making it very clear, Sonny.
Mr. Creighton was a very friendly man, and sometimes he would get lonely, but
the night before, he sure made a play for Miss Barton.
Miss Barton?
Our cashier. Lovely young lady. I'm sure Mr. Creighton was being just...
Friendly, I know.
Anything else you want to know, Mr. Valentine?
No, thanks.
You're welcome.
Anything else we can do?
Did Mr. Creighton say anything after the conversation with the mysterious lady?
Yes, he told me to go on back to the city. He joined me there later.
And did you?
Yes, of course.
Now, it took you less than an hour to drive us out here, Paul. You didn't get back to the city until 4 that afternoon.
I checked. Oh. Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't go right back. I spent a couple of hours with a friend here.
Friend?
A girl, a lady.
Yes?
She has nothing to do with any of this. There's no point in mentioning her name. I won't.
All right, we were just curious. And you, Mr. Holder, what did you do after Mr. Creighton left for his mysterious appointment?
I went home for lunch. It's only a couple of blocks. I always go home for lunch.
At 1 o'clock?
A what?
I checked.
Yes, that's right. But you see, my wife was leaving town the next day and had some shopping to do, so I went earlier.
I see. Your wife's been gone ever since, is that right, Mr. Holder?
Yes, sir. Visiting her family.
Any time you'd like me to drive you back to the city, Mr. Valentine?
I'll ask you, Paul. Thanks. Thanks very much.
Go out with Mr. Creighton? No, sir. Not this little girl.
Oh, I was just curious, Miss Barton.
I turned him down flat. And I was with my roommate all the following day, so I didn't see him at all.
I know that. I was just curious to get your opinion of Mr. Creighton, more than anything else.
He was a wolf, mister. The most dangerous kind. Oh, it isn't that I'm afraid of anybody. And if a nice man were to ask me to go out, I'd be only too glad.
you've been a great help, Miss Barton. Goodbye.
George, there's no question about Mrs. Holder leaving town the day after Mr. Creighton disappeared.
Everything checks?
Yes. She'd been making plans to go to Chicago for quite some time. Talked about them to the neighbors.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Holder bought her a ticket. Drove her to the station.
What did the neighbors say she looked like?
Well, they say she was very pretty. Younger than Mr. Holder. Liked better things than he could get her on his salary.
Good work, Brooksy. I think we ought to see if we can find Lieutenant Johnson around anyway.
That could very well be it, Valentine. Creighton had a lot of money. He had an eye for a pretty woman. He and Mrs. Holder probably ended up somewhere in South America to save themselves the trouble of getting, shall we say, two divorces.
Well, it adds up that way, doesn't it?
Poor Mrs. Creighton. And I'm sorry for Mr. Holder, too.
Yeah, no wonder we couldn't find anybody. We looked high and low. I told you, the hardest thing in the world is to get rid of a body.
No, Johnson, you're wrong.
What?
To get rid of two bodies would be even harder.
We'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. Nobody wants to have tire trouble at any time, and yet it always seems to happen just at the time when you least expect it. You can help to avoid this aggravating situation by having your tires checked and inspected regularly by the car savers at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations. Then if you need new tires, you can take advantage of the special low prices now being offered on famous Atlas tires for a limited time only. Atlas tires are covered by a written warranty that gives you protection against tire damage from any road hazard. It's a warranty that's honored by more than 38,000 Atlas dealers from coast to coast and in Canada. And you can buy the Atlas tire on convenient budget terms. Charge it if you have a Chevron National credit card and get a liberal trade-in on your old worn-out tires. All in all, you won't find a better deal anywhere than that offered now by your car saver. So drive in tomorrow and get complete details on the new low prices on Atlas tires and tubes at any standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. A susceptible and wealthy married man, Dan Creighton, disappears mysteriously after receiving a phone call from a lady. And so you're hired by Mrs. Creighton to try and find him. Well, you get to work and dig up enough evidence to give you a logical answer. Creighton ran away with someone else who was straining at marital ties. Mrs. Holder, the wife of the manager of one of the movie theaters owned by Creighton. So there it is. Case solved. But if your name is George Valentine, you seem to have reservations about accepting your own answer to the mystery. And the only one who really shares your doubts is Mrs. Creighton.
I had to come here to Ridgely Plains, Mr. Valentine. I just had to talk to you.
Of course, Mrs. Creighton.
You're upsetting yourself, Edna.
Oh, you're very worried about me, my dear brother. But you would accept that lie about Dan and that Holder woman.
I know your pride is hurt, Edna, but the evidence. Look at the evidence. Only a trusting soul like Ralph Holder wouldn't think anything wrong about not getting any letters from his wife.
Now it turns out she never even went to her folks.
Dan would never leave me like that.
Yes, Edna.
Mr. Valentine.
Yes, Mrs. Creighton.
I want you to go right on working on this case. Stan and I will stay here at the hotel. And I want you to remember what I said about the seed of destruction that lies deep within each criminal.
I remember.
There was foul play, and the criminal will give himself away. He must.
You're a very optimistic woman, Mrs. Creighton, but I'll do what I can.
Okay, Mr. Dorr, Mr. Valentine's here. What's on your mind?
Well, I feel I must tell you the name of the woman I spent that afternoon with, Mr. Valentine.
Okay. Who was it?
Mrs. Holder.
The femme fatale of Ridgely Plains.
Keep talking, Paul.
I had a date with her. I picked her up after Mr. Holder had his lunch and went back to the theater. We rode around, stopped for a drink in a little cabin the Holders have not far from here.
Nice girl. Kept her date with the kid here. Met Creighton somewhere in Chicago the next day.
Uh-huh. I wonder.
The cartoon is on now, Mr. Valentine. We can talk here in the lobby. Mickey Mouse always goes over big here.
So I hear.
Mr. Holder, was there any special reason for your wife's trip to Chicago?
Reason?
Well, now, you can be honest with me. I'm trying to get at the truth.
It's hard to know what truth is, isn't it?
Hmm?
I thought Dottie really liked me. Maybe she didn't love me, but I thought she liked me.
I'm sure she did.
No, she didn't. Oh, she wasn't bad, but she liked to flirt. I thought a visit to her folks would do her good. Maybe she'd miss me a little and things would be different between us.
Do you think she and Mr. Creighton ran away together?
I don't know what to think. Oh, I kid myself, Mr. Valentine. Sure they ran away together. They sure go big for Mickey Mouse.
I don't know what you expect to find here in Mrs. Holder's room, George.
Maybe nothing. Just curious about how she lived.
Yes, well, I had a job getting permission from the chief here. After all, we're pretty sure now no crime has been committed.
But, Johnson, there are too many loose threads.
Like what?
Like Stanley Collins's pretty good motive for killing Crichton.
Now, look here, Valentine.
I'm not making accusations. I'm just thinking out loud.
Certainly enough pictures of Dottie Holder around.
She liked herself.
And Mrs. Creighton isn't fooling anyone with all this talk of her husband's loyalty. She knew him for what he was for a long time.
Valentine, stop making a mystery of everything.
Well, this would be Dottie's closet, I suppose.
Brilliant deduction.
Let's see.
Oh, not much left in here.
A couple of old dresses she probably didn't think were worth taking.
We're wasting our time. Look, Valentine, Mrs. Johnson is expecting me home for dinner.
Now, that's funny.
What is, darling?
These shoes. Look.
Well, they're brand new.
Yeah.
So what?
So, why didn't Dottie take them along?
Yeah, that is funny.
She probably bought them for this trip, and just a minute.
Now what are you looking for?
Not here. Nope, they aren't here at all.
George, if you don't stop acting so mysterious...
Excuse me a minute, Angel. I gotta make a phone call.
Well, yes, but George,
what was the number of the movie house again? Oh, yeah, here it is.
What do you expect Holder to tell you?
Just what Mrs. Holder took with her.
No man ever pays enough attention to know.
Maybe, but I... Hello, may I speak to... Oh, it's you, Holder. No, nothing really new. I was just wondering if you know what Mrs. Holder took with her in the way of clothes. Uh-huh. I see. Oh, her brother has a clothing store in Chicago, huh? Oh, yes, it's just that we found a brand new pair of shoes in Mrs. Holder's closet, and we were wondering why she didn't take them. Yeah, I guess so. Forgot them, yeah, maybe. All right, thanks, Mr. Holder.
Well, what do you think you accomplished?
She took only a couple of handbags, a few dresses, some underthings, some toilet articles, that's all.
So?
Her brother has a clothing store. She was going to get a lot of new things there.
Okay. So what do we do now?
Well, we wait a little while for the seed of destruction to begin to sprout. Then we go to work.
George, I don't think there's anybody around here at all.
Oh, now don't you be a cynic, Angel. We lost the good lieutenant to the lure of Mrs. Johnson's famous corned beef and cabbage. That's enough.
Oh, I'm the true blue type, George. I stick it out. Even though I don't know why.
No lights in the house. No car anywhere around.
Just as I said. No nothing.
Well, let's see now. You might as well sit out here on the porch, Angel.
What are you going to do?
Look around for signs of freshly dug earth.
Oh. Oh, maybe I will just sit here.
I'll be back after a while, Brooks.
Oh, great. Well, at least I can have a cigarette. Relax a little. Oh, my feet hurt.
I wouldn't bother to sit down, Miss
Brooks. Oh, Mr. Holder.
Quiet, please.
I wouldn't want to kill you just yet, but I will if you force me to.
Oh, I never argue with anybody who has a gun. Never.
Please go inside. No. No, we won't put on any lights. We'll just sit here in the dark and wait.
Wait for what?
For Mr. Valentine to come back.
But why?
You mustn't think I'm a fool, Miss Brooks. I know Mr. Valentine suspects me. Ever since he mentioned that pair of shoes, I knew I'd have to kill him. Both of you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You'll find the place where ground was freshly dug. Find it sooner or later. My own place was the only one where I could work safely, wasn't it?
You killed both Mr. Creighton and your wife.
I killed him first. I knew he had all that money. I saw him flirt with the cashier, and I knew he'd been watching Dottie. So I made her call him at the theater. Came over to the house. I killed him.
But if your wife...
I hated her. I knew I could never trust her, so I had to protect myself, didn't I? Didn't I?
Oh, sure, sure.
He'd already made plans for her to go to Chicago. Everybody knew it. So I took her here, and... she didn't even like me anymore. I had to kill her.
What are you going to do now?
In a minute, I'll open the door and let Mr. Valentine in. I must protect myself against everybody.
No.
I have money now. I need time. Come on with me, Miss Brooks, to the door.
Please, Mr. Holder, you can't go on killing...
Don't be such an impatient young man, Mr. Valentine. I'm coming.
So I see, but...
George!
Drop that gun.
No.
I said drop it. That's a nice boy.
I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Just go along quietly or I'll carry you out.
Yes, I'll come along.
George, did you hear what...
Yeah, I heard enough.
The doorbell. It's still ringing. I thought I was safe as long as I heard you ring the doorbell.
Yes, George, how did you know?
Shades of Halloween. A pin in the bell. The seed of destruction can take all sorts of shapes, can't it?
You know, there are 8 good reasons why Chevron Supreme gasoline works better in any car. And those 8 reasons are Chevron Supreme's 8 high-performance qualities. Quick starting, fast warm-up, full power, area blending, anti-knock, vapor lock prevention, smooth acceleration, and economy mileage. Remember that you get the gas with all 8 when you fill up with Chevron Supreme gasoline. So stop in tomorrow for a tank full at any standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say, and mean, we take better care of your car.
She meant nothing to Dan. I must believe that, always.
That's right, Mrs. Creighton.
He still loved me. Well, here is your check, Mr. Valentine. And thanks for everything you've done.
I'm sorry I couldn't have brought you happier news.
Oh, I wanted the truth. Well, my brother is waiting for me. Goodbye, Miss Brooks. Mr. Valentine.
Bye. Bye. That poor woman.
Yeah.
You know, George, I still don't quite understand that business about the pair of shoes.
Well, that was only part of it, Brooksy. It's what I didn't find in Mrs. Holder's closet that really got me thinking.
Hmm?
Well, I didn't find any bedroom slippers. And Holder didn't mention her taking a pair along. Now, a woman has at least one pair of slippers. We found them on her body. Holder thought his wife was all ready for the train when he killed her. He didn't notice she was still wearing her slippers. That's why she didn't take her new shoes. And that also meant she was killed before she left the house.
The little things we overlook.
Yeah. Well, maybe there is something in that German proverb, the seed of destruction.
Come on, George, come on.
Where are you going? What's the hurry?
Well, look at the time. I made dinner. It's waiting.
Oh, okay. Take it easy.
Well, take it easy, nothing. There's a good American proverb that might work also.
Mm.
The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. You coming, George?
Tonight's transcribed adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West. Robert Daly is starred as George with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It was written by David Victor and directed by Kenneth Biff. Ken Christie was heard as Lieutenant Johnson, Joyce Manners as Edna, Stephen Chase as Ralph, Roland Morris as Paul, Tom McKee as Stan, and Karen Steele as Miss Barton. The music... by Gaylord Carter, your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. Let George Do It is heard overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Sam Hayes suggests that whatever you have for your daily breakfast, you flavor it with a generous serving of news. It's a good way to start the day. A nourishing breakfast under your belt and the latest news stories under your hat. The place to get those latest news stories is on The Breakfast News, broadcast at 7:45 a.m. each Monday through Saturday over this Don Lee station. That's 7:45 Monday through Saturday. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
From August 18th, 1952 on Mutual, Let George Do It, Bob Bailey, our star, in Seed of Destruction, program number 310 in that long-running radio series. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, presenting the very best of old-time radio for your listening pleasure. I'm Jake Longwell. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com, and our website is qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. We'll turn to some comedy, music, and variety for our final offering this hour, as we have an episode of The Martin and Lewis Show, starring Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, a very successful radio series for the NBC radio network in the late 40s and early 50s. Each program featured a special guest, and in this case, the guest is Boris Karloff. As originally broadcast, April 18th, 1952, so rewinding our time machine exactly 4 months back from the August 18th, 1952 program that we just listened to, it's The Martin and Lewis Show on the Upstate Radio Theater.
From Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen, we present the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis are brought to you by Anacin for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia, by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor, by Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too, and by Chesterfield. Ask your dealer for Chesterfield, the only cigarette that names all its ingredients. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our master of ceremonies, Dean Martin.
Hi, folks. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, it's HR for the old Martin and Lewis troupe, and all the familiar hands stand ready to embark on another mission across the NBC airwaves. So, Rich, let's go.
You must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a wonderful child. When you were only starting to go to kindergarten, I bet you drove the little boys wild. And when it came to winning blue ribbons, I bet you showed the other kids how. Well, I can see the judge's eyes as they handed you the prize. I bet you made the cutest bow. Oh, you must have been a beautiful baby, 'cause baby, look at you now. Came to win a blue ribbon, you must have shown the other kids how. Well, I can see the judge's eyes as they handed you the prize. Bet you made the cutest bow. Ah, you must have been a beautiful baby, 'cause baby, look at you now. Baby, look at you now.
Oh, give
hey,
me
Dean, hey, Dean! Hey, Dean! Hey, Dean, I got a question, and I'm really puzzled.
Well, what's up, Jerry? What's puzzling you?
Well, you know that new singer, Johnny Ray?
Yeah?
Well, I can't figure it out. All of a sudden, this guy's a big star. He sells 4 million records. Radio wants him. Television wants him. The girls go crazy for him. And the money is coming in hand over fist. Well, all I want to know is one thing.
What's that?
What the heck's he crying about?
Jerry, Johnny Ray doesn't always cry. He just cries when he sings.
Oh, I get it. You don't sing so good.
Ah, don't talk crazy, Jerry. Johnny Ray sings very good.
Oh, then you should be crying.
Now, look, Jerry, Johnny Ray doesn't bother me any more than Jack Benny bothers you.
Good heavens, I didn't think you felt that miserable.
You don't mind, Jerry. If you don't mind, I'd just as soon drop the whole subject.
Sure, Dean. But first, I gotta tell you, you don't have to worry about those other singers, because in my book, you're the greatest of them all, buddy. And I mean it. You got something that's really different. It sets you apart from all the rest. No kidding. You got something that's really terrific.
Well, that's very sweet of you, Jerry. Tell me, what do I have that's so wonderful?
Me.
Now, you listen here, Jerry. I really do think you ought to start acting your age. You must make a terrible impression on girls.
Oh, no, I don't, Dean. In fact, I always know the right thing to do. Last night, I took a girl to a dance, and I even wired her some flowers.
Sounds wonderful. Did you dance every dance?
Oh, we couldn't. The flowers are wired to her legs.
Well, I give up. I'm through arguing with you. Besides, it's time we introduce our first guest this evening. Tell me, do you know who it's going to be?
Well, that great food expert, Conrad Van Crunch, was supposed to visit us again, but we just heard that he won't be here.
Well, and we don't seem to have a guest, Jerry, unless you'd like to take Von Crunch's place.
Deanie boy, I think that would be splendid Cardinal Sterling and definitely Peachy Keen.
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, it becomes my pleasure to welcome back that international gourmet and author of the best-selling book, Through Darkest America with Knife and Fork. Herr Conrad von Crunch, how are you? How are you today, sir?
Ach, the whole stomach is upset. I feel all nervous, like I have butterflies in my stomach.
Well, that's too bad. What'd you have for dinner?
Butterflies.
Von Crunch, you've been all over the world. Tell me, in your travels, did you have any strange dining experiences?
Well, once when I was visiting Baghdad, I stopped in a little place. It was a sidewalk cafe.
A sidewalk cafe. And what was their specialty?
French fried sidewalks.
Now, that's ridiculous. How can anyone eat a sidewalk?
Don't be silly. It's no different than eating a driveway.
Well, tell me, what else was on the menu?
They served me some soup. But I found something in it.
Was it a hare, Herr von Crunch?
No, it was... What did you say?
I asked, was it a hare, Herr von Crunch?
No, it was a noodle, Mr. Martin.
Where'd you dig up the noodle?
The same place you dug up the hair, Selma.
Herr von Crunch, our time is running out, but before you go on, what was the strangest meal you ever ate?
The strangest meal I ever ate was in the wilds of Africa. I was dining with a Ubangi chief, and he served me a family dinner.
What did the family dinner consist of?
A father, a mother, and 2 little children.
Now, that was incredible.
No, that was Africa.
No one, not even the professionals, can explain what makes a hit song. But when a tune does become a smash, it's usually just about unanimous. Here's a little ditty that's had the jukeboxes humming for quite a spell now. It's all about the little white cloud that sat right down and cried.
I went strolling down by the river, feeling very sad inside, when all at once I saw in the sky the little
what clouds that cry. He told me he was very lonesome. No one cared if he lived or died. And said sometimes the thunder and lightning would make all the little clouds hide. He said, have faith in all kinds of weather, for the sun will always shine. Do your best and always remember the dark clouds pass with time. He asked me if I'd tell all the world just how hard all little clouds try. That's why I think I'll always remember the little white clouds that cry. He said, have faith in all kinds of weather, for the sun will always shine. Do your best and always remember the dark clouds pass with time. He asked me if I'd tell all the world just how hard all little clouds try. That's why I think I'd always remember the little white cloud that sat right down and cried. Ladies
and gentlemen, it now becomes my privilege to introduce our guest of the evening. He's a gentleman we've enjoyed in many stage plays, on the radio, and in countless motion pictures. So here he is, a very fine actor and the world's greatest connoisseur of chills and thrills, the one and only Mr. Boris Karloff, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, Dean, for that very kind introduction.
Well, Boris, I meant every word of it.
Well, this is very reassuring to me. You see, in spite of the fiendish parts that I play in pictures, I'm really a kind and mild-mannered man. In fact, I'm as soft-hearted and gentle a man as you could ever meet. Don't I appear that way? Dean, why don't you answer?
I can't. You're joking me.
I'm so sorry, Dean. Force of habit, you know.
Hey, Dean, I just got a... All right, buddy, it's 2 miles to the cemetery.
Cemetery? I'm not dead.
You're not dead?
No, but I'm enormously interested in people who are.
Hey, you know something? For a minute, I thought you was Boris Karloff, and I got scared. Boy, that guy really scares me. Gosh, imagine me thinking you was Karloff.
I am Boris Karloff.
Jerry, how can you fail to recognize Boris Karloff?
Gosh, Mr. Karloff, I've seen all those movies you make, and you always look so weird and horrible. Your face is so frightening, and you look like a regular monster.
Now, wait a minute, Jerry. It's the makeup that makes me look like a monster.
Oh, I see.
Now tell me, what's your excuse?
Hey, that was pretty good, Boris. I mean, you're supposed to be a dramatic acting. Dean, we couldn't get Peter Lorre.
Now, Jerry, that's no way to talk to a fine actor like Mr. Karloff.
Oh, I was only fooling, Dean. I'm Mr. Karloff, honestly. I've seen all those pictures where you play ghouls and werewolves and things. In fact, maybe you could tell me something.
Well, I'd be delighted.
Is it true that once a year you have to renew your haunting license?
Well,
I mean, do you really spook only when you're spooking to?
Oh, stop it, Jer. In real life, Mr. Karloff is just as normal as you.
Here now, I won't have you insulting our guest.
Boris, I really should apologize for Jerry. He can be real nice when he wants to. He just has to be pushed.
Well, if he has to be pushed, I suggest it be from the highest possible altitude. Yes.
Now, you see how angry you made our guest, Jerry? Don't forget Mr. Karloff played Frankenstein.
What's so wonderful about that? I played Frankenstein, too.
You played Frankenstein, the monster?
No, Frankenstein the butcher. He got the cards full of chicken fat.
Jerry.
Dean, how long must I stand here and be heckled by this animated skeleton?
Boris, you just can't insult Jerry. I don't think he knows what a skeleton is.
I do so, too. A skeleton is nothing but a pack of bones with the people scraped off.
You know what I mean? Do you see what I mean, boy?
Well, it's all in fun. Now, if the truth is known, I've admired you for a long time. Do you know, I saw your latest picture, Sailor Beware, and laughed some fella's head off.
Have you seen all our pictures, Mr. Karloff?
Yes, indeed. And ever since I saw That's My Boy, I've had a secret desire to play your father in a motion picture.
Hey, that sounds intriguing. Boris Karloff playing the father in one of our pictures. Let's find out, Jimmy.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are proud to present Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, and Boris Karloff in that homespun story of the supernatural entitled... Just Plain Dracula. Our scene is the typical suburban dungeon of an average family of werewolves. As we look in on this quaint little home, Frank, the oldest son, is just returning from school.
Well, here I am. Might as well go in.
Anybody home?
Hello, Frank. I'm glad you're home. Just go into the kitchen. I think your mother left you some cold meat.
That's nice. Anybody I know?
You're beginning to sound just like your brother, Herbie.
Ah, gee, Dad. What are we going to do about Herbie? I don't think he likes being a werewolf.
No. I'm afraid he's the white sheep of the family.
Shh. Here comes Herbie now. He seems excited.
And you'll never guess what happened.
Well, tell me.
Well, the game was all tied up. It was the last inning. We had two men on, and it was my turn at bat. The pitcher threw the ball, and just as I swung my bat...
The game was called?
No, the bat flew away.
Well, that's just too bad.
You know something, Dad? I feel different from the other little boys.
I knew it all the time, Dad. He's just ashamed of his family.
You have too much time to think, Herbie. Now, what you need is a job. Perhaps you should work with your uncles down at the bank.
But I don't like to handle money.
Who mentioned money? I mean the blood bank.
I don't want to work there. And another thing, I'm getting pretty sick of taking children to school every day.
But all the big boys take children to school every day.
In a lunchbox?
Herbie, you must learn to be proud of your people. I'm a werewolf, and I love it. In the dead of night, I love to prowl around gravestones. I like to beat and strangle. You see, my son, I revel in blood and death and broken bones.
Gee, Dad, you're cute.
Herbie, you must learn to accept things like your brother Frank. He's happy as he is. And look how all the girls go for him.
That's right. You'd be surprised how many girls lose their heads over me.
Herbie! It's no wonder... Herbie! Herbie, it's no wonder you're a lousy werewolf. You're a sissy.
I am not a sissy. Just for that, I'm going over to my girlfriend's father and I'm going to ask for her hand.
Anybody can ask for a girl's hand.
Clear up to the elbow.
No use talking to him, Dad. I'm going to turn on the radio.
Good idea, Frank. It's time for John's other ghoul. You hear that, my son?
Gee, Dad. They're playing our tune.
Why, son, you do care.
Well... Welcome back to the werewolves, Herbie. Let's sing our anthem.
All right, boys, sound your A.
Oh!
Oh! Oh!
Go then, go then. Hear a lovely ghoul,
spooking and haunting, we're on the run. Though we're not human, we still have fun.
I am a werewolf 12 feet tall.
I never walk when I can crawl.
And I am the biggest creep of all.
Cause we are a trio of ghouls.
I feel so spooky.
Cause we are a trio of ghouls.
Some weeks ago, we were winding up our theater date in Minneapolis, and we decided to have a little blowout after the last show. Well, all the kids were there, and after the remains of a dozen steak sandwiches were cleared away, we sat down for a gab fest, a few stories, and a little close harmony singing. Long about 2 a.m., I finally latched on to one of the prettiest Western songs ever written. So, Richard, let's relive a little, huh?
Empty saddles in the old corral. Where do you ride tonight? Are you rounding up the dogies, the strays of long ago? Are you on the trail of buffalo? Empty saddles in the old corral. Where do you ride tonight? Are there rustlers on the border or a band of Navajo? Are you heading for the Alamo? Empty guns covered with rust. Where do you talk tonight? Empty boots covered with dust. Where do you walk tonight? Empty saddles in the old corral. My tears will be dry tonight. If you'll only say I'm lonely as you carry my old pal, empty saddles in the old corral. If you'll only say I'm lonely as you carry my old pal, empty saddle in the old corn.
That was real great, Dean. Boy, I love everything about the West. I'll never forget the last time I was on a horse. It was wonderful. They couldn't get me off.
The horse caught your fancy?
No, the stirrup caught my foot.
Oh. Excuse me, boys, but I'd just like to bid you both good night. Well, Boris, I trust you enjoyed your visit.
I certainly did. I found your partner quite engaging. Something's been troubling me for years, but after what I learned by watching Jerry tonight, I'm completely relieved.
Hey, that's wonderful, Mr. Karloff. Tell us. What did you learn by watching me tonight?
I am not the most gruesome man alive.
Boris, I agree with you. Seriously, we really enjoyed having you with us on our show.
Yes, we did. And all kidding on the other side, Mr. Karloff, you've been a swell guest, and I hope you'll come back again real soon.
Thank you, boys, and good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, Mr. Karloff. And ladies and gentlemen, we've been asked to give you a message of utmost importance. The American Cancer Society is now in the midst of its 1952 Cancer Crusade, and funds are urgently needed to help the ACS carry on its vital programs of research, education, and service to the cancer patient. Strike back against cancer by giving generously to your unit of the American Cancer Society. Mail your contribution today to Cancer, C-A-N-C-E-R, in care of your local post office. Our listeners have been so wonderful in their response to our pleas for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And we hope you will give ACS the same wonderful consideration. So please, mail those contributions to Cancer, C-A-N-C-E-R, in care of your local post office.
So until next week, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis reminding you that our current picture, Sailor Beware, may now be seen at your local theaters. Until we see you, good night, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Hollywood, you have just heard transcribed the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, written by Ed Simmons and Norman Lear, produced and directed by Dick Mack, with music under the direction of Dick Stabile, and brought to you by Anison for pains of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia, by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor, by Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too, and by Chesterfield, the only cigarette that names all its ingredients. Sound off for Chesterfield, the cigarette that's much milder, with an extraordinarily good taste, and most important, no unpleasant aftertaste.
Transcribed. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
From April 18th, 1952, on NBC, The Martin and Lewis Show, with special guest Boris Karloff. And that wraps up this hour of Old Time Radio. My name is Jake Longwell. I hope you enjoyed listening to these broadcasts as much as I enjoyed presenting them for you, and I look forward to your company again soon for more great sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.